Aubrey Masango on 702.
Live, online,
DSTV and 92.7 and 106 FM.
Alex Simeonides is my guest, CEO of Capital Legacy. Hi, Alex. Good evening to you. Am I pronouncing your surname properly?
Unfortunately not, but no one ever does actually get it right. Good evening, Aubrey.
If you could give me the right pronunciation, I really want to try, Alex.
Sure. Simeonides.
All right, I got it. Yeah. Simeonides. All right, Alex, thanks very much for coming through. I really appreciate your time, sir. There's a marked escalation in the number of people that are wanting to set their matters right at the moment by way of wills and estates and wills and testaments. Tell us why. What's going on?
So, look, I mean, there's a sense of morbidity around the world. I mean, you log onto the internet and you look at the death counts and the infection rates, and it's front of mind. We spent the last 8 years trying to get people to do exactly this. It's just such an unfortunate set of circumstances where it's got people thinking and trying to act to get their wills done. We've seen a doubling in our online traffic over the last month, but it's just really something it's a circumstance we're not happy to be doing well in.
Sure. Absolutely understandable, Alex. I mean, it's one of those very strange times that businesses that are doing well in one specific aspect are not proud to be doing well. And you're right, we are forever telling people, please get your will and testament right, get your will and testament right. And it doesn't get the kind of response that you are talking about at the moment. Is it because of this ominous reality that we may all be facing our mortality in more ways than one at this point?
Yes, I said it a little bit earlier today. You know, last week and the week before, we had panic buying of toilet paper, and now we've got panic buying of your last will and testament paper. And it's crazy out there. But I also think it's got to do with people having a little bit more time now.
Yeah.
I think after the dust settled with the mad rush, when I talk to my consultants, my will consultants who engage with the clients, they say they're having a longer chat with the people, even though it's on the phone, more engaging, people are caring a bit more. So I think it's also got a big time factor. I think we were hurried off our feet up until this point.
What are people asking for at this point?
People are simply asking, how can I get my will done? Can you help me over the phone? Can I sign it electronically, which unfortunately you can't, for it to be valid? So, yeah, people are just simply calling in and saying, please, can I get my will done? I want to get my affairs in order.
Yeah.
Excuse me.
Give us a call if this kind of thing has been on your mind over this period more than it has been perhaps on other times. Give us a call, 011-883-0702. What are you thinking about? What questions are swirling about in your mind at this point? Clearly, there is I didn't realize that you couldn't sign an electronic document that makes your will valid at this time. It seems to be the case for insurance policies. Why is it not the case for wills and testaments, Alex?
Well, it's a bit of a, you know, the famous saying, the unintended consequence. You know, when we entered into lockdown, essential services were looked at, banks were allowed to talk to each other, the provisions of the Competition Commission were lifted. And what was simply overlooked was the fact that if you want to do a will, it needs to be printed, it needs to be signed an original. Yeah. It needs to be witnessed by people who are not benefiting or executing your estate. So if you're in your home with your family, 99% of the time, they're the ones that are going to be getting the inheritance, so they can't witness the will.
Yeah.
So it's a complete oversight, a complete unintended consequence. But you asked what the difference is. The Wills Act provides that a will needs to be signed, whereas other documents just need to be indicated as accepted. So that's really the difference. And because the will is so open to abuse and fraud, I'm nervous to put out to the powers that be in the Department of Justice say, no, just let people sign people like an insurance application form, because we already see fraud where people, copy other people's signatures and type things that they shouldn't be typing.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a catch-22.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702. Are you thinking about updating your will? Give us a call and find out from Alex what you need to do in order for the document that you want to update to be valid in law, I suppose, eh, Alex. It's the law that is ultimately going to decide whether a document that has your final will and testament involved in that, whether that document is right. It's not the whim of somebody out there who's in an administrative position. It's a legal document. Hello, Alex?
Yes, hi. Sorry, I missed the last bit there.
So what I was asking is that this is in terms of the law. It's not just some sort of convention or a preferred protocol. This is law that it has to be signed, and it needs to be an originally signed document.
Absolutely. It's signed in our law. That together with documents that relate to the title of your property. And I agree with that. As I mentioned earlier, it's so open to abuse in terms of fraud. But
Yeah. There's
a piece of legislation that says, one, it needs to be signed and original. Two, it needs to be witnessed that it is your signature. And three, those witnesses cannot be your executor or beneficiaries. It's got to comply with that.
Yeah. What is the one thing that you are finding is a common thread over the recent period of the escalation of people wanting to, you know, update their wills and so forth? What is the common thread? What is the big issue that is arising that you are seeing as common?
I don't know how deep I'm allowed to go on the radio, Aubrey, but let me just maybe skirt around it. So what we've seen a lot of, and what I've personally engaged with a few of the clients, is people are trying to now live what they should have maybe done in their lifetime through their passing, through their will. So, for example, they're trying to create these massive wishes of money for their children, but it's money they don't actually have to give. It's this detachment from reality that we're currently experiencing. And people are giving us long lists of wishes of every single item in their home that they want to leave to different people. It's got to that level of wish. Obviously, these things are not practical. It's impractical to do that.
Yeah.
But that's what we've seen at the moment. The will is becoming a wish list.
But where would they imagine the money would be coming from? I'm asking that question quite often these days. Where would they be imagining that money is coming from if they haven't put it away themselves? What inspires that wish list?
Maybe they're taking life cover. Maybe they're just not thinking about it. Maybe they're going to the end results of what they wish would be the outcome if they passed away. Hopefully they are taking life cover. We see many, many estates where there's just always insufficient life cover. People have just relied on their savings. I think the other thing that we've seen is people are assuming that their debts are expunged on their death, which you know, they want to leave the house to someone, but it's got a bond. And they just, you know, think the house can go. But of course, that bond needs to get paid. And I suppose that talks to the national discourse where there's this huge gap of understanding what the reality is financially and what is actually there in terms of the consumer. They just, you know, generally speaking, not grasping these concepts and making poor decisions as a result.
I'm picking up on that. I'm really picking up on that, especially in this difficult time, Alex. That there is a preponderance to believe that there's money somewhere that I am owed. There seems to be the idea that there is a well of money that is somewhere that is never ending, that we at difficult times have access to. And it's not always a very rational way of understanding things. I mean, I'm sure that governments, businesses have emergency funds for different events and so forth. So that's understandable. But there seems, and by the way, give me a call if you're also sensing that. Give me a call. But there seems to be, and it might not be just a South African thing. It might be a global thing, that in very difficult times, people tend to default to an idea that somewhere, somehow, there's money and it's waiting for me because I'm in a difficult time. Would you agree?
Yes, we've seen that quite a bit. Maybe people do that to give them a sense of security, a bit of hope. We know it's not real. We know it's fictionary. But yeah, I think maybe it's also a moment of despair.
Yeah. Yeah, because I'm seeing it, and I understand where the desperation is coming from. I understand it, but I sometimes stop and think to myself, okay, sure, I understand the request, I understand the demand, but where's the money practically going to come from? Are you getting to a point where you are asking some of your clients, okay, great, I don't mind putting that wheel together for you, but where do I fetch that money should you expire?
So maybe, yeah, so when someone does do something like that, our consultants are trained to talk it through with the client because we will not allow a will to be drafted. We will not allow a will to be drafted that, one, we know cannot happen. It's practically impossible to enforce. It lulls people. It almost confirms their
erroneous,
belief.
Yeah.
And so my consultants are not allowed to do that. We would rather turn the client away if they don't want to listen to it. But we'll do it in nice way. We'll talk them through it. Because the problem, Aubrey, is when someone goes off on that tangent and you're consulting with the will, it detracts from what's also really important. The fact that you do have some money, you do have some assets, you do need to create a testamentary trust if you've got minor children. You do need to specify who your executor is. You do need to think about the legal expenses, the executor fees, the conveyance fees, the trustee fees. But people, you know, in these particular circumstances, I'm not saying it's all the time.
Yeah.
They get distracted and end up, maybe they do a will that doesn't need to even make any impact in helping them secure their legacy.
So give me a call, 011-883-0702. I'm sure that the thoughts that Alex and I are talking about now have entered your mind. Indeed, this COVID-19 moment has all made us understand that maybe we aren't as immortal as we sometimes think we are. And I suppose what that does, it makes you start thinking very seriously about your will and testament and whether or not those kinds of things are being properly prepared in your family. But have you done those fundamentals, those basic things that Alex is talking about? Have you been clear about who your executor is? And be sure that the executor can't be a beneficiary. I mean, you said something like that, didn't you, Alex?
The executor can be a beneficiary.
Oh, I see.
They just can't witness the will.
Ah.
Another interesting thing that we see is that people like to hide behind their will and wait until they pass away for the, let's just say, the unfortunate or awkward conversations happen. And I always encourage the people we consult with, you know, to say, if you want this person to look after your children, don't you think you should speak to them first before, you know, they dropped it at their doorstep? Tell them that, you know, you've created a trust for them to look after the money. If you want someone to get something or you want your children to decide who gets what in the house, don't put it in your will and then just leave it to be. You know, you need to talk to your family. It's awkward. No one wants to talk about it, but that's something we also encourage because you're not there. It's only a piece of paper that's left behind and for people to read it. So maybe that's also something we can put onto the listeners
to think about. Do you think that has something to do with the idea at some level that, you know, it's an honor that I'm leaving you to you know, look after my children when I pass? And very little sort of thought is invested in understanding the practicalities of that.
No, absolutely. I mean, if I just put myself, I mean, obviously I come from the industry, but if you've asked me to be the guardian of your children, if you and your spouse have passed away, I've got some simple questions. How have you provided for them financially? Do I need to maybe expand the space of my dwelling? Maybe I've got children as well. Are you happy for them to go to the same school as my kids, if I've got my kids going to school? These things need to be spoken about. I mean, the chances of it happening are slim, but they do happen.
Yeah.
And if it is your concern, then you need to talk about it. And I think when you talk about honor, Aubrey, I think it's honorable that you go and speak to those people.
Yeah. It's not just honorable, it's just just again, it's just very practical. You know, I'm sure that the person who's going to be the custodian of your children after you've passed needs to understand some of those practicalities. And if you've got a very clear story as to how you want those practicalities to roll out, what provisions have you then made for that? Give us a call, 011-883-0702. Have you perhaps looked to a brother or sister, a family member, and you've assumed that should you pass, that family member would have the honor of looking after your children? Yeah? Well, maybe the honor isn't such an honor if you haven't thought clearly about it and you've talked about it and you put it down on paper, says Alex. And I'm really hoping that you can give us a call about this. You know, in my sort of background and cultural sort of background, Alex, some of these things are sort of thought of as fait accompli. It's sort of something that you don't even have to talk about. And I understand that it comes from a particular background and cultural reality. But times have changed. Eh? I mean, times have changed. There are very limited resources. People have now understood the idea of a higher, better quality of life. So these things must be talked about, even though there might be a particular cultural expectation in the event of your death and how your children and your assets are to be looked after. Yeah?
Absolutely, and I think it almost leads on to another point. You know, this may be your cultural belief, but you've entered a world where you own property. You mentioned it now. You've accumulated assets, and the reality is that once you've dealt with the practicality of, say, looking after your children, there's a thing called executor fees. There's a thing called conveyance fees. There's a thing called trustee fees. So you may say that I've got this property that I want to leave for my family to live in. And apart from paying the bond, if there's no money to pay for the executor or the trustee or the conveyance fees,
yes,
that house needs to be sold. And that's where you hear these horror stories about my executor sold my house or that sold the house. And it's not true. It was inadequate planning or inadequate thought. And this is also the conversation that needs to be had when doing the will. To say, well, how much are those fees? Let's work them out on a calculator. Do I have that kind of money available? Is there something I can do to solve those fees so that property can go 100% without having to be sold? And that's another practical element of when you do a will that needs to be thought on and is not thought about enough.
Well, that word practical keeps coming up because I think that sometimes we live in a very sort of philosophical, sort of nebulous, sort of dreamy world sometimes, and then the practicalities of reality come and slap us in the face, especially during the time of death. And I'm getting the sense, Alex, that you're saying, look, we don't want to burst your bubble here as far as your dreamy sort of stuff is concerned, but at the end of the day, you've got to come to the party understanding that there are certain practical realities you've got to be aware of that you're going to have to submit to. And that's why this is an important conversation to have.
Well, you know, a will is not exactly a contract, but you are appointing us to be your executor. You are entrusting us to deliver on your final wishes when you are not there. We need to have an opportunity to engage with you and be able to deliver what on your expectations. And if we can't deliver on your expectations, we need to be able to manage those expectations with the realities. It's a two-way street. You know, you only have one chance to get this thing right.
Yeah.
And you've entrusted us. So you need to listen to us, and we'll do it as nicely as we possibly can. Maybe, you know, a lot of people don't want to hear the answer. I mean, Aubrey, maybe without making a super generalization,
sure,
we see very, very well-heeled estates not take cognizance of the fees, not take cognizance of the things we've spoken about in this show. And so it's not just limited to, you know, people who only have one house. I'm talking about people who are wealthy,
yeah,
have also not engaged properly. This is not a selective problem.
Sure. No, I get that sense that it is a situation where a across the board, people sometimes do get a little bit tardy as far as this is concerned. I'm reading a couple of messages coming through on the WhatsApp line. The number there is 072-702-1702. This person says, "Hi, did my will through Capital Legacy yesterday. Got it sorted in one day. Excellent service," says this person. And then this person says, okay, this is something completely different. But what is the process, Alex? No, I don't want to read what I've just received there. What is the process? What do people need to do in order to have a valid current will?
Well, our world was turned upside down with initially social separation and now isolation. So we've always promoted face-to-face consultation when doing a will. And the reason for it is that when you're talking to someone and you're looking at them in the eye, you're drawing pictures and you're playing out scenarios, you get to cover all the important points of the world that we've discussed in the show. And needless to say, with the lockdown coming and the 2 weeks prior to that, we were unable to get out to see people face to face. We cover the whole country, so we could come out to anywhere. And so our whole world had to turn upside down very quickly as a business, and we had to quickly train 100 consultants to be able to talk on the phone, to use things like Zoom and Teams. And I'm glad you got that one message, you got your will in one day. That was our driving force in the last 2 weeks, to be able to flip quickly and be able to still deliver the service like we used to. And then the encouraging thing we found is that because people have more time, we're having more generous conversations with them, more enriched conversations with them. So we've learned a lesson. We've learned a big lesson here as a business that, you don't have to be stuck in your ways. There are other ways. Just unfortunately took such a terrible crisis to bring that out.
Indeed. But what is the process? I mean, I am thinking about these questions that you and I have already talked about. I listen to 702 and I hear Alex, CEO of Capital Legacy, talking about this stuff. I get the contact details. I phone Capital Legacy. What do I say? How does one even start this conversation?
So that's the thing. We assume that you don't know where to begin, so we'll hold your hand the whole way through. You say you're interested, we will then book a consultation with one of our agents, and they will then dial you up at the given time. You need to allot a good 45 minutes to an hour, and then we will start with a series of questions. How are you married? What do you have? Do you have children? And then we start getting to, asking you to close your eyes and say, well, if you had to pass away today, what would you like to happen financially? And then we talk you through the bequest that you need to make. You may then say, no, I want this to happen, and we will navigate that and see if it's practical or not. Then we'll culminate and actually, now we know how you want your will to work. We know it can be enforceable. We'll then calculate what your legal expenses are when you pass away. So typically, if you went to an attorney or a bank, they would just say it's a percentage and leave it at that. Yeah. We go one step further because we believe that if you say an executive fee is 3.5%, it's overlooked. When someone passes away and you say it's 350,000 rand, it becomes far more real. Yeah. So we do that calculation for you so that we can then look at solutions to help you not have to have those fees payable. I don't want to do any pitches on the radio, so Aubrey, but that's the process we go through.
Is that ethical, though, Alex? Is that ethical for companies to be giving you a percentage instead of a proper rand figure, especially in a situation such as this?
I think the word ethical is very, very, maybe too strong. I mean, it is a percentage that's in our law.
Sure.
I just think it's about the delivery, right? If you want to hide behind the percentage and not make it real for your client, I'll ask you why. Why not do that calculation? Why not have them write that check now, figuratively speaking, and then use that as your basis to try and minimize the impact of those fees on their estate? And I'm all for professionals earning fees, but the problem with the percentage is if I have a 10 million rand estate and I have a 1 million rand estate and both estates go to a spouse and both estates have a house, why must the one cost 10 times as much as the other? And the same goes if I have 100,000 rand estate and a 1 million rand estate. And that's the problem with the percentage. And that's where we have some really cool solutions to get around that's what we believe is an unjust fee structure for clients.
Well, you guys are really shaking up that industry, because I don't think that a lot of people are going to like the fact that you guys are challenging the industry in that way. This person sends me a message, says, "Hi, Aubrey, if I write a will with Alex, how will they know that I have passed away so that they can enforce the will? Who tells them about my passing away?"
So very simply, we always encourage you to have two copies of your will, one with you, one with us, and obviously all our contact details on there. It's the expectation then that the family contact us. We are, however, plugged into the Home Affairs data, where we're able to track the lodgement of your birth certificate. And we do then, if we haven't heard from you, we will then make contact with your next of kin to reach out to you, to the family. But very rarely we actually need to get to that, to be honest. We always get the phone call, if not before the funeral. But I encourage all South Africans to always try to keep two copies, one with us, one with yourself.
Yusuf is in Benoni. Hi, Yusuf.
Good evening, Aubrey.
Yeah, good evening to you, Yusuf. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. Alex, tell me, if a person draws a will, can you have two executors, or is it specified to have one executor? And secondly, second question is that I see a lot of people are rushing off now with the, I know this current situation with the corona virus is going around. People are just dying all of a sudden. The power of attorney, does that help in any way? If you don't have a will, some people don't have a will, but they drop in power of attorney.
Yeah, so let me answer the first question. So yeah, you can have as many executors as you please. I mean, our great Madiba had several executors on his will, if you recall the reading of his will. I encourage it. If you've got a complex estate, you may want your brother or a close family member, and then a professional, such as your accountant or an executive firm like ourselves. So it's horses for courses, Yusuf. If you've got a simple estate, I would encourage one professional executor. To your second question about a power of attorney. So when people want a power of attorney, we can provide you one. But what we've discovered is that, well, what we know is that you would want the power of attorney to be able to transact on bank accounts. And the reality is you actually need to complete the power of attorney that are forms that the banks individually sort of supply. And you may also then need to also look at being, well, you may also need to have a situation of being under curatorship. So power of attorneys, unless drafted really, really well, and if you're not under curatorship, are ineffectual. Typically you would be looking at managing the person's financial affairs, which means you would need to be using the relevant institutions, processes, and having a court ratify that power of attorney.
All right, Yusuf and Benoni, thanks very much for your call. Alex, what's the default, if I haven't got a will, right, and I haven't done all of these, what is the default status? What is the thing that an estate is going to be subjected to should you not have a will by default?
Well, let's maybe go through it step by step. So the first thing is that the master of the court will appoint typically an attorney to execute the estate. Attorney that obviously you were never involved in appointing. They may also just appoint a family member and then enforce them to use an attorney or a professional. The next is that your belongings and your assets will be divided after second of the debt according to what you call it, what is known as interstate succession. So it's a predetermined set of guidelines that depending on what your family tree looks like at the time of your passing. Yeah. So, for example, your spouse would get one third, and your two kids would get one third, one third. So just saying, for example.
Yeah.
And again, these may not be in the percentages that you had wished, but they are predetermined. The very worrying thing is that if you've got cash, because children are automatically deemed to have a percentage share, that cash, because you didn't create a trust for them, will go into the government's guardian fund. Now, there's nothing wrong with the government's guardian fund. It earns interest and so forth, but it's a rather impersonal and impersonal and difficult process to extract money from on a regular basis. It's far better off, you know, having a trustee and a trust that can pay the medical aid and pay the light and water at the tip of a switch.
Yeah.
So these are the realities of passing over without it all. Your estate will still get wound up. It'll certainly take more money. It'll certainly take
more time, and certainly won't be what you wanted.
So, because that was going to be my next question. I mean, why shouldn't people use the mandatory available sort of measures that are there? Why would it be more preferable to use a company such as yours if there are predetermined sort of protocols that can be followed?
So if you pass away without a will, it doesn't mean that you get away from the fees. The fees, in fact, aren't even more because you've got to hire in more professionals who take a longer time, typically speaking.
Right.
So there's no benefit there. So then there's no other benefit because then, you know, you've got a set of predetermined rules that are not what you want. You're not getting away from any fees. In fact, you're compounding the problem. And you're leaving behind a family who are clueless because there's no direction. We typically see people who pass away because we get hundreds of estates where people have died without a will. And the time difference between people who have had a will and people who haven't had a will is marked. You can see the difference in the turnaround times. And it's purely because of people being clueless. There's been no direction that's been left. And I think it also talks to, right back in the beginning of our conversation, you spoke about honor. I think there's also a responsibility, especially as a breadwinner, to make sure that you've left clarity, that you've left certainty. You know, you get up and go to work every day, and all we're asking for is 45 minutes of your time to make sure that all that hard work is followed through on.
And it gets hairy, Alex. I mean, I've seen families literally torn apart because those stipulations weren't made as to how the wealth will be distributed after the passing of the principal. You know, it is harrowing to see. So absolutely hear that. This person says, hi, Aubrey, I'm divorced. If my ex stays unmarried, will my children be entitled to inherit his wealth? Or can he give his wealth to anyone he likes through a will? Asked MK.
So let me understand the question. So he's divorced, and if his ex stays unmarried, will his children?
So it sounds to me like it's a she, but this person says, I'm divorced. If my ex stays unmarried, mm-hmm. will my children mm-hmm. be entitled to inherit his wealth? Or can he give his wealth to anyone he likes through a will?
So the I'm going to give the technical answer. So he can typically in a will leave his wealth to someone else. But there is such a thing called a children's maintenance claim. So in terms of our legislation, children below the age of 18 and a stretch, below the age of 21 are protected against exactly the circumstance where the biological parent and breadwinner cannot just disinherit them. And in fact, it would end up in a disaster for the person he was trying to maybe benefit, say, a new spouse, because we've seen these child maintenance claims rack up in the millions, the way the calculation is done. So, you know, if he had come to us, for example, and said, look, I've got two children, I'm divorced, and I'd like to leave everything to this new spouse, we would put up a flag and say, well, you know, sir, ma'am, you are looking at a children's maintenance claim here, despite what you're doing. We strongly suggest you reconsider.
What about children that are now adults? Would they have some sort of claim over their father's wealth, even though they are now adults, if the father were to disinherit them by giving his wealth to a new spouse, for example? Would they have any claim over that wealth?
They wouldn't have a leg to stand on.
They wouldn't have a leg to stand on?
No, they wouldn't.
Okay. All right. Okay. This person says, hi, Aubrey. If I draw up my own will, get a witness, have it verified by a commissioner of oaths, is the will valid?
So this person certainly sounds like they like to cross their T's and dot their I's. The commissioner of oaths is potentially unnecessary. It's only really used in very special circumstances. As long as it's signed and original and you use two witnesses who are not the beneficiaries or the executor of the estate, your will would be valid.
But I imagine that there are certain pitfalls in a scenario like that, Alex, because I suppose, you know, people that are trained in understanding different, legalese, the legal language, because legal language sometimes is designed to do away with ambiguities, double meanings, and all of those kinds of things. In a will that is not professionally written, you may find that you fall prey to some of those grammatic mistakes that may give people trouble interpreting your will at some point, isn't it?
Yes, we've seen it a few times, especially for the predatory type of families who want to try exploit what we call a clerical or oversight. But I must actually give kudos to our master's officers. They're very good at looking at a situation of a will like that and using a reasonable mind. And if they absolutely need to, then referring it to a court. So in all our experiences where there's been this, say, poor use of words, the underlying intention is sought out by the various master's officers in a really, really efficient and reasonable way. And only twice we've had to take it to a high court because the families were being belligerent. And in fact, the court found in favor of what the master's view was. So I think you opened up the show talking about, you know, sometimes when our government do well, and that's somewhere they're very strong.
Yeah. And that's encouraging to hear, especially in that space, Alex, that at least we have some decent government oversight as far as this is concerned. But, I mean, I imagine you're going to be a little bit careful here, but your advice, if you were not the CEO of Capital Legacy, what would your advice be? Would you advise that people go the DIY route? And if not, why not?
So I'm going to avoid not being a promoter in our company. if you go the DIY route, you have a high probability of omitting a certain consideration. You may not think that you need a testamentary trust, but in fact you do. The concept, you're saving nothing by talking to companies like ourselves and other banks, and you know there's no charge for the will. So why not take advantage of a professional service? Yes, there's a catch at the end when it comes to fees, but even if you do a DIY will, you're going to need a professional to wind up your estate. You're not going to get away from those anyway. So why not just do it properly?
Yeah.
It's going to cost you less at the end of the day, and it'll actually save you a lot of time.
And we are now seeing that it is easier to do your will without having to be physically present at Alex Simeonidis's offices. It can be done over the sort of mobile technologies that we now have. So there are far more, how should we say, conveniences that are built into the process now than before.
Absolutely. You don't want to be sitting there till midnight clicking several buttons and next buttons trying to get a will done and then not knowing if it's 100% correct. So I would suggest a consultation. You spend 45 minutes answering some questions and in the next 15 minutes you have a perfectly crafted will.
How do people get in touch with you if they want to call you tomorrow to get their matters in order, Alex? How do they do that?
So we, at the moment, would just encourage email at the moment. Obviously, with the isolation, the amount of traffic on the phones is quite high.
Yeah.
So if you can email us at lifeinfo@capitallegacy.co.za, and one of our agents will be in touch very, very shortly thereafter. Just unfortunately, at the moment, the phones are clogged up with having to reroute all over to people's homes.
Alex Simeonidis, did I do it right?
Nearly.
I'm going to keep practicing. Thank you very much, my brother, for joining me. And I hope that your message has been heeded. I think it's a very, very important one. It's critically important at this time. I really appreciate your time.